Over these now over 70 talks and guided meditations, we've kind of gone through a particular discourse of the Buddha called the Discourse on Mindfulness of Breathing, mindfulness of breathing in and breathing out. And the heart of it is these very simple, almost like cliff notes, maybe, instructions on mindfulness of breathing. And the text goes on, and there's more teaching the Buddha gives that builds on these six, or extends these 16 steps, mindfulness of breathing, that also represent the development and the growth, the onward leading nature of this practice. That as we do this practice, something gets born inside. Something begins to unfold or express itself. And a variety of things. And some of those things are called the seven factors of awakening. And the way it's presented in the text, it isn't so much that we practice the seven factors of awakening as it is we recognize them. In other places, the Buddha is quite explicit that in some of these factors of awakening, the very recognition of them is the nourishment, the food that allows them to keep growing. So this organic growth of something that happens as we really have starting to learn how to give ourselves over and trust this process of being aware of our breathing, being aware of being present, not caught up in our thoughts and distractions and preoccupations. Learning to be with ourselves in a caring way. And so these seven factors of awakening develop, and they're called factors of awakening for two reasons. One reason is that they lay down the foundation or lay down the conditions upon which awakening can happen. And the word Buddha means the one who's awake. It comes from the word awake. And Buddhism is, in a sense, could be translated into English as awake-ism, in that it's the ism that has to do with liberation, with freedom of mind, of heart, in such a way that something wakes up, some kind of awareness. When a person has a first taste, first glimmer of this, what this awakening is, this liberation is, so much so that it gets their attention, it really, like, oh, this is central. This is really what this practice is about. Or this is how, this is the I want to make this the center of my life. Nothing else is as important. Even the tremendously valuable love and compassion I have for others, nothing compares to freedom, a freedom that allows the love and compassion to be clean and supportive for everyone, including oneself. So that when you have first taste of that, that's called, it's described sometimes in English as entering the stream. Literally, the language in the Pali is entering the current of the river. And if you can stay in the current, it'll carry you all the way to liberation. And so learning to recognize that current, learning to stay in it and be carried by it, then becomes part of the practice after the first glimmer. And so the text, this discourse on Seven Factors of Awakening, ends with a little section that has a lot of ellipses, so it's not always, does not really spelled out all the way. It's very short, and I think it's really easy for people reading the text to just skip over it and not see it. But what it says is it picks up, it talks about the seven factors of awakening, how they rise out of the practice of mindfulness. And then it goes on to talk about how those seven factors of awakening come into play and how they develop and keep growing and support us after awakening. And that is, now they are based on something. They are based on, and I'm going to give you my kind of adaptation of the Pali words, because the Pali words, if to translate literally into English, I think doesn't mean as much for an English-speaking audience. But the kind of the value that the fullness of these words are closer to maybe what in English, in the best senses of the term, terms, would be. Now they're based on a sense of independence. Someone who's entered the stream, entered the current, is said to be independent in the Dharma. Now they know what the Dharma is for themselves. They know. And they don't need more books or more teachers or anything. They just know, and they know what the practice is about. So they're there's an independence. They're based on independence. And it's based on freedom, a sense of real freedom, that we're no longer in bondage or entangled in things. And so there's a sense, a feeling of freedom. And there's a sense of that all the suffering, all the attachment and clinging, something, conceits we have, there's a stopping. There's a phenomenal ending that's happened that's always here. And these three qualities, independence, freedom, and kind of an ending of, is are usually in English translated as, and we've seen them, I haven't seen all of them, but one of them is translated in English as seclusion, the other as dispassion, or the absence of, dispassion, or the fading away of clinging. And the third is cessation, which is, and those last two, the fading away, dispassion, and the cessation, that's in the Anapanasati Sutta, it's step 14 and 15. But now these qualities are kind of available to a person. They've experienced a degree of independence, a degree of freedom, a degree of the stopping, cessation, that is memorable. Now it's ever present in some kind of way. It's not that it's always aware of it, but it's just like right there sitting on your shoulder or close by. Just like in the guided meditation, I talked about silence and stillness and spaciousness kind of always here in some kind of fashion, that once we have a clear, really clear experience of them, powerful experience of those, maybe there's always some sense that these are ever present as well. When love is associated with this, then some people will say that, yes, love is always present. And or when all these together maybe give a sense of real peace, peace is always present. And so with awakening, something, quality of that awakening remains available or is recognizable. And then it becomes a basis for doing the practice further. And so now we know what the practice is about. And now the idea is, now we want to practice in harmony with that. We want to practice in that spirit or in those attitude of those. So that if part of it is this independence, seclusion, that we want to do it in a way that we practice, the awareness itself has a feeling of being independent from what it knows, independent of what we're aware of. We're not entangled or caught in it. We want to recognize how to be free, where the freedom is in awareness. There's no freedom in clinging and wanting more and expecting, and or no freedom in reacting, you know, this is terrible, I'm a bad meditator, or this shouldn't be here, this is embarrassing. Of course, there's all these ways we're still not totally free, and there's all kinds of things that arise and bubble up, and the mind gets busy and distracted, and difficult states of mind might arise. But it's possible that at some point, that in spite of those, we don't get tricked by them, we don't get pulled into them in a, we stay independent of them, and we stay free of them. So we're not caught and entangled. They still arise, but because we're independent and free of them, there's a disinclination of identifying with them. I'm saying, this is who I am. This is who I am. And then there's this last quality of something has ceased, something has stopped. And one of the things that stopped is the preoccupation, beliefs, attachments to ideas of self, ideas that tend to bring conceit and self-concern. And this stopping of self-preoccupation, self-concern, being self-consciousness, not totally, but to have some flavor, a feeling of that, a taste of that, and letting that be part of the mindfulness as well, where the mindfulness is not entangled or caught up in being self-conscious or self-critical. There's a clear sense that awareness itself is free of this self-concern or self-preoccupation or self-identity kind of things that we're doing. And so mindfulness then becomes a very different quality. Mindfulness becomes more an expression of the Dharma moving through us than it is so much something that we are identified as a doer or the agent of. We're more to the degree to which we're an agent, we're more the enabler of it. We get out of the way of it. We allow awareness to be there. And we notice in this field of freedom and independence and something has stopped. There's space for everything. And that's why I like to think that liberation in Buddhism is we give liberation to everything else. Everything becomes liberated from our entanglement and concern rather than I am liberated. It doesn't really make sense anymore to say I am liberated, I'm free. And so over and over again we see in the suttas, in the teachings of the Buddha, that the ultimate goal is described in terms of kind of negation. A liberation is kind of a negation of being entangled, being in bondage. We're free now. Seclusion or independence is a kind of liberation from being dependent in an unhealthy way, perhaps, or being claustrophobic in the middle of all kinds of concerns. And cessation or ending of something is an ending of something, of suffering, of clinging. So there's a strong tendency for the Buddha to repeatedly give the ultimate goal of what practice really is taking us as defining it as an absence, not as the presence of something. If he talks about the presence of something, the most he seems to do is to talk about it as in terms of peace. And what's I think beautiful about this is that even the experience of liberation, you know, that it can feel palpable feeling of freedom and independence and an absence of suffering, is when we're free, there's no inclination to make it into something, to make it something we hold on to, make it to say that it is something, the presence of something, because then that's already, even asserting presence of something is a way of kind of a little bit grasping and clinging. There's this uncompromising attitude of just trust, letting go, being free, being this, you know, the mind not clinging to anything. And in doing that, there is this beautiful way in which there is maybe a nourishing stillness, silence, spaciousness. Maybe that's interpenetrated with love and compassion and care and wisdom. It's not being frozen, it's not being disconnected. But it's not exactly the same as being connected either. It's being free. So the practice of Anapanasati ends this way. It ends with this reference point of practicing based on the qualities of awakening itself. And that's, in some ways, is available for everyone well before we become liberated. And in fact, that's often what Dharma teachers are trying to do, is to say, practice non-reactively, non-reactive awareness. Practice non-judgmental awareness. Practice open awareness. And that, you know, what they're doing is really trying to get these qualities of awakening already there. And so we grow into it, and it grows and develops and comes to fulfillment. And finally, don't worry so much about this path of practice. The only thing to be concerned about and happy about, exactly where you are in your practice. That's the place where practice and the Dharma unfolds. Be content and happy, and discover awareness of where you're at, not where you think you should be. So thank you, and we'll have one more talk tomorrow on this topic, and maybe for this next day you can look around and see if you've been overlooking things like silence, stillness, spaciousness, or independence, freedom, cessation, endings. See if you can be nourished by that and supported by it. Thank you.